Good morning. So the current U.S. varicella vaccination program has a routine recommendation for children to receive two doses, and that was implemented in 2007. The first dose is to be given at 12 to 15 months of age, and the second dose at 4 to 6 years of age. So the rationale for the two-dose recommendation was to help provide better control for circulation of the varicella zoster virus, and also to help decrease varicella outbreaks, especially since we saw lots of outbreaks that were occurring among school-age children with high one-dose coverage. So to help us better monitor the impact of the two-dose program on outbreaks, we established a varicella outbreak surveillance in schools, starting with sentinel sites. So the Varicella Active Surveillance Project provided funding to jurisdictions who applied through CDC's Epidemiology and Laboratory Capacity, or ELC, cooperative agreement. Jurisdictions participating were required to conduct active surveillance for varicella outbreaks in school settings during the academic years of 2012 to 13 through 2014 to 15. And cases and outbreaks were reported to these jurisdictions by school nurses, healthcare providers, and laboratories. The jurisdictions were also required to enroll at least 300 schools to conduct surveillance in, and they were required to collect aggregate data on cases of varicella that were associated with these outbreaks. And some of the data that we asked for were demographics, vaccination status, and clinical data, including disease severity, which is based on number of lesions. So we defined an outbreak of varicella as 5 or more cases occurring in a school within 1 incubation period, or 21 days. And we conducted descriptive analyses to examine the outbreaks by academic year and case characteristics. So over the project period, 10 jurisdictions participated in at least one school year. And here you can see in the second column the number of jurisdictions participating each year. We also have the number of schools under surveillance and the number of students under surveillance. And as you can see, those numbers increased over time. But then when you look at the farthest column on the right, the proportion of outbreaks per school under surveillance actually decreased over time. However, that decrease was not statistically significant. So overall, during the project period, 29 outbreaks were reported with 262 cases. None were reported from 2 of the sites. The median size of outbreaks was 8 cases, ranging from 5 to 31, and the median duration was 31 days, ranging from 4 to 100 days. But again, these differences did not differ significantly over time. When looking at the characteristics of varicella cases associated with these outbreaks, we saw that most of them had mild disease, which we classified as less than 50 lesions, or moderate, 50 to 249. And also, the age group that was most affected were the 5 to 9 years. Then when we looked at the number of outbreaks by size, we found that there were 16 outbreaks that occurred that we categorized as smaller, so 5 to 7 cases, and these represented 96 cases. And as you can see, 41% of the cases associated with these smaller outbreaks were among vaccinees who had received 2 doses, while 33% were unvaccinated and 17% had received 1 dose. And the unvaccinated and the 1 dose are what we consider under-vaccinated. So we only saw 3 outbreaks of the larger size, which we categorized as 8 or more cases, but they represented 166 cases. And as you can see here, the majority of those cases were in unvaccinated or 1 dose vaccinees. So in conclusion, we saw that the majority of cases associated with outbreaks occurred in under-vaccinated children. The outbreaks did include cases among two-dose vaccine recipients, but those with the greater proportion of the two-dose vaccine recipients tended to be smaller in size. So full implementation of the two-dose varicella vaccination program may help improve control of varicella outbreaks. So now I just want to acknowledge the participating jurisdictions that helped with this project. Thank you.
Okay, so now we have a Q&A period. Does anyone have questions for any of our speakers?
Hi, my name is Aizen Azam from Nevada. And I have a question for the last speaker, Ms. Lopez. Two things. It shows really that in the one of the last slides, it showed that the people who got two vaccines, two shots of the vaccine, had higher proportion in the outbreak than the people who were vaccinated once. And another thing, it seems that the definition of outbreak is not universal, because we know really that an outbreak of any disease should be more than two cases. So on which basis you selected the five or more?
So I'll start with your second question first. The outbreak definition is somewhat arbitrary. It really depends on, and we've struggled with this for a while, whether we should change the outbreak definition. Now that we're doing the ELC, Vaccine Preventable Disease Surveillance Coordinator Project, we've asked for states to, or jurisdictions, to look at clusters as well, which we define as three or more cases, and then five or more cases are considered an outbreak. But it really depends on what your plan is for when you call something an outbreak, so it depends on the response. So really, we would like to see something happening when there's one case occurring, but with the high number of varicella cases, it's hard to have, you guys to say, one case is an outbreak, because we're not really in an elimination setting as of yet. So right now we're still doing the five or more cases as an outbreak, but we are collecting data to see if we should decrease that number to three or more.
Yeah, I would say really that would be helpful, because when you are compressing the number of outbreaks, your statistical power of the study may get impaired significantly when we really are just reducing it by half.
Right.
So the second one really is a question, really, again, I wasn't really sure if I saw the slide, but it showed that 41% of the people who got two shots were contributors to the outbreak. So how did you conclude that the number of the shots is impacting the occurrence of disease?
Well, for that finding, it's more about the size of the outbreak. So we're still going to see cases among two-dose vaccinees, and they are going to be part of outbreaks. But the outbreaks that they were part of, a majority of those were the smaller outbreaks.
Okay.
So that's what we were.
Thank you. It makes sense. Thank you.
Okay, next question. You might stick around just in case it's varicella.
Mm-hmm.
Next question.
I'm Rachel Wiseman from Texas, and both my questions relate to the Minnesota project, but would the CDC give other states the specimen collection kits?
Yes, I would have to talk to our lab, but they've been willing to do that previously.
Okay, and then my second question was, what was your rate of return? How many collection kits were given out, and how many did you get back?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we don't have that data, because what we did was send out kits. We'd send, three kits, five kits maybe in a large outbreak to a school or a child care, hoping that they would be able to find takers for those kits. So we didn't really, we did not really track that.
Hi, my name is Emily Spence-Davison. I have a question for you. I'm from Colorado. I'm curious what, if any, feedback you got from schools and parents about providing these specimen collection kits, and if they were interested in having the results, or if it was sort of what was the buy-in or the reason that the parents chose to participate. I'm curious about, please.
Yeah, I think for some families, the gift card incentive was a motive, and a lot of them were interested, though, in having the results confirmed, and did ask us to, and we did let parents know, since they were the collectors. It was not really a medically collected situation, but we did let them know about the results, so that was an incentive as well. We never got complaints because of the low-pressure way that we approached it. The schools didn't object if the kits weren't taken, so there really didn't seem to be a problem. And it was the parents who had the chore of actually mailing them back to us. So
yeah,
And how did you get schools to buy in, and or what was the response of the school health professionals to kind of being the middle person for distributing the kits and recruiting people?
Right. It really varied across the spectrum, and 2.5 years, kind of hard to recall all the responses, but in some cases there'd be a school nurse only there one day a week at school. So then that slowed the process down. If she wanted to be the keeper of the kits, oftentimes that failed.
Okay.
But if we had a school, somebody in the school office that would hand them out, and they just got the word out to parents somehow, then that was more likely to be successful. Or if the nurse was there every day, it was more likely to be successful.
Okay, cool. Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Jennifer Rosen from New York City. Question for you as well. Because not everybody has scabs or crusting, did you give parents the option of swabbing the macular lesions?
We were a little concerned about that because, well, at least CDC recommends that you abrade the macules with a glass slide. You have to be a little rougher, and we did not want to cause any bleeding from the edge of the slide. So we were just, you know, for the sake of safety and at least the perception of safety, we didn't do that. I don't know that swabbing, is Adriana still here? I don't know that swabbing a macule that had hadn't gone to the vesicle stage would have been an effective way to go.
We actually do that a lot in New York City and have almost always had positive PCR results.
Oh, really?
But I think that's an interesting point about the perception of safety, and that makes sense.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. Darren Westphal. I'm visiting from Australia. I have a question. I think it was for Kelsey from LA County Public Health about the influenza. All right. What reminder methods did you use? And my question is, did you explore why those were negatively associated with vaccine uptake?
Sorry, as I was walking up, I couldn't hear the last part of
sorry.
The question.
Yeah, so the reminder methods, mm-hmm. what were they, and did you explore why they may have been negatively associated with vaccine
yeah,
uptake?
Yeah, so the reminders that we specifically asked about were through email, text, and page.
Okay.
And we are struggling with the hypothesis for that a little bit, and it differs from what most of the literature says about reminders. But we're thinking one hypothesis might be that providers are experiencing alert fatigue, and maybe constant reminders might not be the best incentive for them.
All right, great. Thank you. And I have one more question for Beth from New York City. This might be one you could just yell out. Did you do any genotyping, and do you know what genotype the mumps virus was? Okay, thanks.
Did everybody hear that, genotype G?
Hi, Tom Hennessy, CDC Arctic Investigations Program. This question is for the LA County presenter, Kelsey. One of your findings was a little counterintuitive. I may have missed it, but it seemed that influenza vaccination receipt as a condition of employment was not associated with better uptake of vaccine in that healthcare institution. I'm wondering if you could talk about how that information was collected and how you interpret that.
Right, and so that's self-reported in that survey into NHSN, so the facility reports if they use that as a condition of employment. I'm not exactly sure how NHSN then defines it and if the facilities really fully grasp, perhaps, the definition. Again, that was another finding that was interesting to us. And I think those results are just reflect the smaller sample size. Very few facilities in LA County do use vaccination as a condition of employment. So it's just not significant.
Mm-hmm. So not something you're really relying on based on the way the information was collected?
Perhaps, yes, or just the few amount of facilities that employ that strategy.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have time for one more question, and there's one more person.
Hi, good morning. My name is Laura Ann Nicolai from Vermont. My question is for Minnesota. I was interested in knowing if there was any negative pushback from clinicians in that testing. Was there any thought that testing is like bypassing the primary healthcare home, or that, you know, since I know you said testing wasn't always being offered in the primary care setting, but did you have any negative feedback from clinicians about offering testing directly to parents? Thanks.
Vicki? The question was, did you have any negative feedback from clinicians about offering testing directly to parents?
The answer to that is no, because we did not tell them about it.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.